Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show, lots of good people involved. And the host and founder of the program is Carol Marx. Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. And we're going to kick this hour off with a very interesting conversation conducted between Carol Marx and Paula Poundstone. She's the stand-up comedian, author, actress, interviewer, and commentator known for her distinctive brand of spontaneous observational comedy. She's now heard on National Public Radio's weekly news quiz show, Wait, Wait. Don't tell me.
And, you know, I think every career has a beginning, and you were bussing tables, and hey, that was okay. And then, voila, you left bussing the tables, and you started to do stand-up comedy at open mic nights in Boston in 1979. So growing up, it has to be that you loved both the sound of laughter and causing it.
Oh, I do and I did. I remember my mother would have friends over to play canasta, and she would send the kids up, you know, like we'd have to stay upstairs so that they could have a good time. And my sisters were always kind of resentful of that, and I, on the other hand, I just loved the sound of their laughter coming through the floor. And she had a couple of friends that were from Maine. I was raised in Massachusetts, but she had a couple of friends that were from Maine, and those maniac laughs were just the best. I mean, they were from the toes, you know.
And you laughed.
So I do. I love the sound of laughter, and I love thinking up stuff that I think is funny and then telling it to people. What an easy job.
You know, you make it easy. You know, and then you went from opening up in Boston to traveling across the U.S., and you went by public bus, and you performed at comedy clubs along the way. You wound up in San Francisco, where you became very friendly with the wonderful and so talented comedian Robin Williams that we all loved and who sadly passed away. But I never realized that he really did help your career, Paula, as well as those of other comedians who were trying to get started. And what a warm and loving person to do that.
He was great. He, you know, I think there was a resurgence of interest in stand-up comedy that sort of exploded in the 1980s. They used to always say that, you know, comedy was the rock and roll of the 1980s, and really continues to some degree. But that Robin was almost single-handedly responsible for that explosion because he was already a big, huge star by then. From Mork and Mindy and from what he did on Mork and Mindy. And he brought this new energy and new excitement to the form of stand-up. You know, I mean, stand-up comedy's been around since we came out of the caves. But he brought audiences back to places where there was stand-up comedy. And people came because they thought they might see him. And then there was the rest of us. And they saw us and decided like, oh, well, we think that person's funny too. But really the thing that got them, you know, off their couch and out of their house was this desire to see the very exciting Robin Williams. And that literally was all over the country because he was all over the country. He was like the Tasmanian devil. You know, he'd be performing at a 3,000 seat amphitheater somewhere and later that night would show up at Uncle Funny's Yuck House. There's not a club in the country that didn't have a picture of him on their stage, and not because they ever paid him to be there, but because he's sort of, you know, he's Johnny Appleseed. He was out sort of, you know, sprinkling the seeds everywhere, and so I wouldn't be working were it not for him.
You know, so we will always miss him, and I want to talk about something else that you're known for, and that's the fact that none of your shows are alike. Each one is different. So how did you come up with that idea, and how are you able to be so spontaneous? Because it can't always be easy.
Well, no, for me it was the other way around, which is I don't have the best memory. And so when I would try to do, like when I started doing open mic nights, the premise of an open mic night was that anybody who wanted to could get up and do 5 minutes. And like I say, there had been this sort of explosion in interest in comedy, and therefore, and back in the day, you can go see an open mic night as an audience member. There was usually no cover charge. And so it was a really fun way of, it was fun to sort of get on the ground floor of new comics kind of thing. And even there would be experienced comics come in as well, but so whatever. So I'd go do these 5 minute things, and there'd be such a lineup of comics waiting to go on and these, you know, huge fun crowds to work to that if you went over your 5 minutes, the other comics were very upset about it. So I would, you know, all week long, I'd be memorizing my act. I would tape it on the, I'd type it on the back of menu / placemats from the restaurant where I bucked the tables, and then I'd, you know, have it all memorized, and I would walk out onto stage for my big 5 minutes, and invariably, I'd either be nervous and forget what I was going to say, or something on my way would distract me, and I would refer to like a guy sitting at a table or something like that there, and then I would immediately not know where I was in the 5 minutes. And so I was always forced to sort of, you know, work the room or improvise somehow because I had no idea where I was in the 5 minutes. And I, you know, I could see the other comics sharpening the knives in the back of the room because they were pissed that I'd gone over. So I used to always think of it as a liability. There was this terrible thing that I couldn't remember what I was going to say. And I don't know on what day it dawned on me that that was the absolute joy of the night. And so finally I just stopped holding myself to doing what I planned to do. And rather, you know, certainly I have material, but my favorite part of the night, now I just embrace going wherever I feel like it. So my favorite part of the night is I do the time-honored where are you from, what do you do for a living, and in this way little biographies of audience members emerge, and I use that from which to set my sails.
And you know, so everybody just is interesting. Everybody, no matter what they do, is interesting. If you, nobody thinks they are, nobody thinks there's something funny about a life, but when you start talking to them, it does all come out.
Oh, once you get people going, I was at an event in Chicago the other night, and there was a man who had a toothpick collection, I swear to you. I thought I had died and gone to heaven.
And why did he have
And he was married.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I married a man with a toothpick collection.
That's comedian Paula Poundstone in conversation with Carol Marx. She's heard on the National Public Radio show Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And, of course, she's been quite a famous comedian, author, actress, interviewer, and commentator for a very, very long time. If you want more information about Paula Poundstone, go to her website. It's paulapoundstone.com. And if you want more information about the great Carol Marx, go to her website, atouchofgray.com. It's atouchofgray.com, and gray is spelled with an E. All kinds of interesting stories, the adventures of Carol. She's quite a woman. And in the archives, a lot of the great interviews that you hear on this program are available, in addition to entire programs going back for years. This show's been on the air for approximately 20 years in syndication or in local broadcast configuration. So do spread the word also. Tell your friends that there is a show like this on the radio or online, specifically geared for folks 50-plus and their friends and their relatives and children of all ages. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment with the second generation of Osmonds, David Osmond, in conversation with Carol Marx.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi,
This is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage, when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we continue now, as promised, with the conversation between Carol Marx and David Osman and Dr. Shannon Munoz. David is a member of the Osman Second Generation. That's the name of a band comprised of all brothers and sons of Alan Osman. Now, David Osman is the nephew of Donnie and Marie Osman. Dr. Munoz is a neurologist who cares for MS patients at the MS clinic at UT Southwestern. David is a MS patient, and he's written a song to raise awareness about the disease called I Can Do This. Okay, we're going to listen out to the conversation, and I'll tell you how to find out more about this campaign. Here is Carol Marx in conversation with David Osman and Dr. Shannon Munoz.
David, I want to say I heard your really inspirational song, I Can Do This, that you've written, and it's such a great rallying cry for people who have MS to take charge and actively maintain and manage the state of their disease.
Yeah, and you nailed it, for sure.
You know, it's such a beautiful song. So can you tell us the interesting story of your grandfather and how he inspired you to write I Can Do This?
Thank you so much. MS is something that I live with. I was diagnosed in 2006, and it was when I was actually in a wheelchair, believe it or not. It took me off the stage. I was in a state of paralysis, unable to move, unable to do music, unable, I had pain all over my body and many other symptoms. But now that I'm doing my music again, still I have MS. MS does not have me. I'm able to manage this much, much better. And I wanted to share, the best way I communicate is through song. And so I did write that song, I Can Do This. And as I thought about what message I could possibly share, I thought about my grandpa and the words of wisdom he always passed along to me. And he was a tough dude. He was a drill sergeant in the Army, literally, and raised his voice accordingly, raised us. And I remember as a kid, he'd come up to me and say, you know what, David? You're going to go through hard times in this life. You're going to have struggles. You're going to have trials. But I promise you something, David. You can do it. You can do it. And you keep doing it. You keep pushing. You keep fighting. You will overcome. And that tenacity and that strength that he talked about, he showed as well. He passed that on to my dad. My dad said the same thing. So when I write this song, every word of this song has been handpicked, and really it comes straight from my heart. And I hope it brings a little bit of inspiration, a little bit of joy to your life, and helps you think about your challenges, whether they're MS or something else. You know, we all.
And that's an important point.
Yeah, we all have stories we're writing and the trials we face. I believe that with great attitude and with good education and understanding our challenges, the best ways to overcome them, we can overcome. And that's what's so cool about MS nowadays is there are options. There's great things happening.
And we're going to ask the doctor a little later on about that. But first, I want to ask Dr. Muniz, can you very briefly describe what MS is?
Sure. MS is a chronic neurological disease that can affect the brain, the eye nerve, and the spinal cord. And it's different in everybody with symptoms. Some people have very mild, some have more severe symptoms. And 85% have relapsing remission. When they get symptoms, they kind of wax and wane. And the treatments now, there's so many different ones to help decrease having relapses. And we know that early treatment is very important, along with good diet, like low cholesterol, low sodium, vitamin D supplementation, not smoking, exercising. All those things are helpful.
Yeah.
The key is to get on treatment if you're not on any.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I take a pill form called Gilenya as part of my disease-modifying therapy, including that vitamin D, which is key, and in many other supplements, diet, exercise, working with a team to build what's the best course of action for me. And I encourage everybody else with MS to do the same. Go find your physicians. Get involved. Find those answers. Because they're out there, and there's some great options now, which is so cool.
Yeah, if you're on something that you don't tolerate or it's not working for you, you now have other choices to go back to your doctor.
And, Carol, I got to tell you, this song we were talking about, yeah. I Can Do This, it's actually a free download. Our friends at Novartis
have
come up with have made that possible. Go to the website, ourvoiceinsong.com, and you can download this song for free. We did a music video to it as well that you can have. And so many other things available on that site, like resources and tips about MS.
And I could just see everybody should watch the video, because watching you take that stage, run all over it, have your voice so powerful, that in itself is a great message for everyone.
Thanks,
great
Carol.
Amazing.
Thanks. Music is power. Music is a powerful medium of communication, and it's the best way I express myself. So I hope that this song resonates with everyone. It's a fun song. It's fun to dance to. My kids love it, and I hope that your family does too. Share it with your friends. Share it with those that you know are going through a tough time.
It'll help everyone.
Yeah, I hope so.
Now, Dr. Muniz,
yes.
It just happens that David had a form of MS, and his father had a different form.
Yes.
Is there any genetic component to somebody having it in a family if somebody else has it?
Yes, there's a slight increase in inheritance. It's not as highly inherited, say, as hypertension. There are over 200 genes they know are involved with inheritance, so it's actually very complicated. There still needs to be some kind of environmental trigger. So if someone has a first-degree relative with MS, they have about a 2.5 to 4.5% chance of having MS.
Is it easier now to diagnose it?
Yes, much easier. I've been in practice for 24 years, and MRIs are so helpful now. They're so much better. I have to tell you, just how age me here, the MRIs, when they first were coming out, they used to say UBOs, unidentified bright objects, those little white spots of MS, and then later they found out those were lesions of MS. So
wow.
It's easier to diagnose now.
And, David, how important is it for people that have MS or chronic disease to get family support? Wasn't that crucial for you?
It was massive. Huge, and it still is. I mean, I was actually dating my wife before I had any symptoms of MS, and I proposed from being in that wheelchair, and she still said yes. Having that support, that kind of unconditional love, is huge. But I'll tell you what, that love comes in so many different forms, and this community of MS has it all over the place. There's great support groups. There's great foundations and organizations that help us all, help me, to feel that love, to feel that support, and it's huge. So I encourage those that are living with MS, and there's so many we don't even know about that do live with it daily, to come out, to get involved, to get diagnosed, to get treatment, to take charge, and it will make a world of difference. And some cool things are happening for MS, as we've talked about. It is snowballing. It's getting better and better, and it's promising. There is hope to be had.
More than one person an hour is being diagnosed in the United States.
And that's shocking. One person an hour. Just think of it. David said it's a great time to have MS because more research is going on. So, Dr. Muniz, what are some of the research that's going on, and what are the other options in treating MS? I know the pill has come out so that you can take treatment for it in the form of a pill, but what else is going on?
So we have injections, we have IV, and we have 3 oral therapies. Other things are coming. These medicines we have now all decrease relapses, decrease future disability, but we're going to have, hopefully in 2 or 3 years, some medicine to take in conjunction with what we have now to help see the healing of the myelin, and that's really going to be revolutionary
when
we
awesome.
Have that.
Yeah. Cool stuff happening. It really is promising, and I'm just excited about the future. I remember my dad years ago. He was diagnosed before any of this.
Yeah.
They gave him some Tylenol and Advil, said, hey, come back in 6 months, maybe we'll have some.
We've done so much now, and the medicines now can do so much to change people's lives. So I'm really encouraging people, because, as I said, I started practice before we had anything. It's a whole different disease once you're on medication.
And, you know, David, I love the lyrics and the music. Nothing's got to get me down. I've got to find my place somehow. You said the listeners can download it for free.
I'd love to hear you sing it next time.
Well, we're going to use your song when we play this on the air. We're going to use it as our bumper music, because I love it.
Oh, nice.
So I wanted to ask you about the website. Is it ourvoiceinsong.com that they need to go to get the download?
Yes, ma'am. Go to ourvoiceinsong.com. The music video is there. The download is there. You can download it for free. And then, of course, a lot of resources and tips and information about MS and some of the things that I do, things I've learned. And we share together. We learn from each other. And I hope that this helps people from some of the stuff that I've gone through and continue to go through.
And I understand that you're taking a tour around the country, talking
right.
about MS. Is there a website where people can find out about your tour?
That, I believe that information will also be on the ourvoiceinsong.com as far as where I'm going to be, what I'm doing. You can always follow me on social media, on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And I have a website, davidosmond.com. And you know, we're all so connected nowadays, which is so cool.
David Osmond and Dr. Shannon Munoz in conversation with Carol Marks. If you'd like more information about this campaign, go to ourvoiceinsong.com. That's ourvoiceinsong.com. I'm Michael Harrison. You're plugged into A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, which continues right here in just a moment.
Times I played it all out in my mind, and now it's time to go, time to give the world the show that I've been dreaming all my life. The day has come, I'm gonna give myself a chance. Come on, I'm getting off the fence. The way it's over, yeah, it's my life.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray.
Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and I want to turn you on to a little bit of popular, or contemporary, I should say, music that spans the decade, spans the digital divide between the 70s and 2014. The group is called Gun Hill Road. I used to play them back in the early 70s when I was in my early 20s, and disc jockey at WNEW-FM in New York City. And they had they were a group of young guys in their early 20s from Westchester, named themselves after a famous road and subway stop in the Bronx. And they had two albums that we used to play a lot of the different tracks on FM rock radio. And they had a big hit single that was on AM radio that you might recall. It was titled Back When My Hair Was Short. Well, they went their own ways, lived their lives, the decades passed, and then about a year ago they got back together in their mid-60s and went into the studio and recorded an absolutely stunning album of 19 original brand new tracks that sound like the great rock music of modern times. I mean, it just covers the decades in terms of style. And also, there's a song on it that is so appropriate for this program. You know, we don't play a lot of music on this program, but this song called Everything Passes is absolutely appropriate for A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. So here's just a little taste, just a few seconds, of Everything Passes from Gun Hill Road's new album, Every 40 Years.
Sometimes I think I'm alone. I think I'm the only one who's ever gotten old. But I should have known that it's the same sob story I was always told. But But just like everybody else, I didn't listen when they whined. I had to find out for myself. You lose your body and your mind. Oh, everything passes. And now I need glasses. Oh, I can't see far. Though I've traveled far and wide, I'm still a boy inside.
Isn't that cool? That's Everything Passes from Gun Hill Road's new album, 19-track album called Every 40 Years. As I said, they're in their mid-60s, and they're better than ever. If you want to know more about it, go to the website, gunhillroadmusic.com. A couple of really cool videos there, their history. I wrote the liner notes on this album. I'm very proud of that. Perhaps you'd like to pick up a copy of the CD or download. You can do it right there at gunhillroadmusic.com. Check it out. I'm Michael Harrison, and you're plugged into A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, which continues right here on this great radio station in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. He's in conversation now with R.D. Rosen, who's written a new book titled Such Good Girls, The Journey of the Hidden Child Survivors of the Holocaust, published by Harper.
How did you first learn about these children, and how many were there during the Holocaust?
Well, before the war, there were
as many as 1.5 million Jewish children living in Europe, 90% of whom were murdered by the Nazis in one way or another. So that leaves about 150,000, perhaps at the most, children who survived. Some of them survived the camps, but many of them survived in hiding, like the three women in my book. And the whole phenomenon of the hidden child survivors, and certainly what happened to them after the war, is one of the least reported aspects of the Holocaust.
Yeah, and you know, what's interesting on so many levels, I'm bursting with so many questions. First of all, who were the people that took them in? And I guess these three women are good examples of different types.
Well, the people who took them in fell into several categories. They may have been nuns who took them into convents. They were also, I guess you would have to call them good Christians, good Samaritans. Good Samaritans doesn't even begin to cover it, since the penalty for harboring a Jew was to be killed.
Mm-hmm.
So it was remarkable that so many Jewish children were handed by their parents, who knew in most cases they were doomed and wanted to save their children, that they were handed to Christians, or in some cases to rescue networks, as I said, convents, monasteries, and schools where they were hidden during the war. Some children, like one of them in my book, had six or seven different homes as they were shuttled from one place to another.
Now, these children really took on totally different identities, even personally, with their own psyche. Isn't that right?
Well, that's where this whole thing started. You asked how this all began, and you mentioned something about your own ignorance. My own ignorance as a Jew growing up in one of the safest places to be a Jew in the world, a Jewish suburb of Chicago, felt that I hadn't really understood the Holocaust. You know, there's a certain minimal amount of information that most American Jews know about the Holocaust, but I had kind of been plagued for years that I didn't know more. It's kind of like a high school term paper I had failed to turn in, so it was weighing on my conscience. So when I met this woman, quite by chance, at a Seder several years ago, Sophie Turner Zaretsky, and heard her story, which is unusual even among hidden child survivors, I was stunned, because what happened to Sophie was, at the age of five, she and her mother were the only members of the family still living in the ghetto in Lwów, Poland. The rest of their family had either been deported or murdered. But the two of them, the mother and the child, got Christian papers. They were able to buy Christian papers. They walked out of the ghetto, but not before Sophie's mother had said to her, "You're now Catholic. Here's your new name. Let's do the catechism. You're never to refer to any of us by our Jewish names or recall your father. This is a life and death situation." So they walked out of the ghetto. The mother eventually, unbelievably, got a job working for a Nazi. And, of course, she knew every minute of her life for the next 3 years that she might be killed. She might be denounced or uncovered and killed. Her daughter, Sophie, actually came to believe that she was an anti-Semitic Polish Catholic schoolgirl.
That was the thing that really was so amazing to me. But then thinking about it, how young these children were and what they were going through, how could anyone be equipped for that?
Well, they weren't. And when Sophie learned at the age of 11, when her mother said, this is after the war, "Sophie, do you remember what your name was before, when you were Jewish?" She looked at her mom and said, basically, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah.
Because a Jew was the last thing in the world Sophie wanted to be.
Right.
She had no recollection of having been a Jew, and she'd been inculcated into the Polish anti-Semitic culture. So at 11, she found out she was that very most detested creature of all, a Jew, and had what you could call a kind of a breakdown. And the ramifications of that, you know, identity confusion are with her to this day. All three of the women in my book still are alive and active and living in New York and still feeling the effects of the Holocaust.
You know, yeah, let's talk about that because, you know, it's one thing, and certainly when you think about it now and this generation of Holocaust victims, people who can speak of it in the first person, knowing it, having experienced it, they are all dying off, and you know the times for these stories to be told in the first person are really decreasing. But what kinds of effects did it have later in life on these people? It was interesting that the women you picked out all had very successful careers, but what kind of effects did this have on people?
Well, the psychological effects are many and sometimes disastrous for these children. The three women I wrote about are not unique, but unusual in the fact that they very slowly were able to overcome these terrible traumas and lead very productive lives. One of them is a radiation oncologist in New York, and two of them is therapists. And interestingly, the woman in my book, the one who was most damaged and who was left with nobody after the war, not even really an identity of any kind, she, in her 30s and 40s, got a PhD in psychology and decided to study how other hidden child survivors were able to survive, what psychological mechanisms they used. Now, the irony of this was that she had never dealt with her own issues. She approached them through other people's issues and wrote some very seminal papers. And only years later, in her 50s, when she was giving a talk to some middle school kids in New York City, and she began to tell the story of how she showed up at school in southern France one day after the Germans had come down to take over southern France from the Vichy government, how the teacher had said, "Would all the Jewish children please raise their hands?" And Flora, who was six at the time, knew somehow that she should not raise her hand.
Yeah.
And her best friend sitting next to her did raise her hand and disappeared. So now she's telling this story 40 years later to a group of middle schoolers in New York, and she breaks down. Hmm. She completely breaks down in tears and sobbing and cannot continue. For 20 minutes, she says, she stood in front of this class weeping. And she realized at that moment that she had never actually felt the impact of what had happened to her at the age of six. So to answer your question, there is a lot of delayed reaction. It's taken them, you know, their lifetimes to try to process what happened to them. Because, as you know, what the Nazis did, the extermination, was on an unimaginable scale. I mean, we've had genocide since then, and every genocide is despicable, is hideous. But these women were caught up in an attempt to exterminate an entire people, not just within Germany's boundaries, but all over Europe. So just trying to get your mind around that, even if you weren't directly affected by it, is difficult. But for these women to understand what happened to them is a very arduous process.
Oh, I can only imagine. Now, there is a support group for the people who did go through this. Isn't that right?
Yes. Well, the thing about hidden children is they had to remain silent in order to survive, and they carried that silence and that isolation into their adulthoods. So it wasn't until 1991 that a group of hidden child survivors here in New York decided to establish a foundation and hold what was the first international gathering of hidden child survivors, to which about 1,600 children, former hidden child survivors, came.
Wow.
From all over the world. And it was the first time that any of these hidden children had met each other. And it was an event at which some of them even learned for the first time what their original names were. But it was a phenomenally important event for all of these people to come out, because they were still in hiding, essentially.
Sure.
That's R.D. Rosen in conversation with Steve Wiseman. His book is titled Such Good Girls, The Journey of the Hidden Child Survivors of the Holocaust. It's published by Harper. Steve Wiseman returns in just a moment discussing bank call center scams. That's next when A Touch of Gray continues.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marx offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marx is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we continue our conversation with Steve Wiseman. Steve is a prolific writer in addition to being an attorney and an expert on so many of the topics we talk about in this show, as well as scams and frauds. He's written The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall, and Identity Theft Alert, his newest book, also published by Prentice Hall. His website is called scamaside.com. You should visit it. Steve's here now to discuss bank call center scams.
Thank you, Michael. You know, recently there's been a dramatic increase in call center scams involving banks. And all banks have toll-free numbers that customers can use to contact the bank about any banking question or concern. Sometimes when you call, you'll actually even get a person eventually. Now, scammers have been purchasing telephone numbers that closely approximate the real bank telephone number to catch people who had inadvertently misdialed the bank's number. By the way, can we still say misdial since there are no dials anymore? In any event, when the customer reaches the telephone number of the scammer, maybe it was off by a digit, A recorded announcement makes it appear as if they've actually received the or reached the bank's call center, and that's when the scam begins. In one version of the scam, the caller is told they are eligible for a free Walmart gift card, and they're directed to someone who requests the caller's credit card number for verification purposes. In a lot of these scam calls, the supposed bank employee has a thick foreign accent, which does tend to indicate that this scam, as a lot of other scams do, is originating overseas. But don't count on this just being someone with an accent, because we've got scammers here in the United States who are just as adept. You know, I've long advised you not to provide personal information to anyone that you haven't called at a number that you know is legitimate. But this scam involves a call that you make to a number that you think is accurate. In fact, in investigations of some of these scams, the phony telephone number was just that, just a single digit off from the real bank telephone number. So the best way to avoid this scam is certainly to very carefully input the telephone number when you're calling any company or government agency with which you do business, being aware. And that's what you got to do, is you have to be aware that a simple misdialing can lead to you being scammed. You also should be aware of anyone asking for personal information when it doesn't appear necessary to answer your particular question. It is scary out there, but the bottom line is a lot of places do not need that Social Security number, for instance. Even, say, when you go to the doctor and the doctor wants it, they don't need it. They don't need it for identification. The only reason they're getting it is so that they can use it to help collect a bill if it's overdue. So bottom line, again, is be skeptical. Don't provide this personal information to people who don't absolutely need it, and you'll be okay.
.com, and his new book is Identity Theft Alert, published by Prentice Hall, as well as The Truth About Avoiding Scams, also Prentice Hall. Steve Wiseman, thank you. And thank you to Beverly Santinello, our producer on the front line, and, of course, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.